If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Welcome to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at Above the Fold, and you can stream the show live at realtalk93.com. I hope everyone had a, we'll just skip the weekend. We got another one coming up. That's the good news. It is Tuesday, though, only Tuesday. I'm focused on volleyball. Football is in the dumper for me, so we'll see what happens. Important week today, important week this week on the commission meeting side of things. City Commission will be meeting on Wednesday. We've got Independent Ethics Board meeting today, actually this afternoon. Early next week, a Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency meeting. And if you if you're a frequent listener, you know what that means. Again, I've tried to distill down the long name, Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency Board of Directors meeting. When you hear a long name like that, you should always be a little bit concerned, because that means they probably involve money. And this is, this is the sales tax money that will be collected over the next 20 years, well over $100 million, I believe. And what we'll talk about today at the bottom of the hour is the allocation of a part of that money, which it used to only go to capital infrastructure projects, and then all of a sudden the state allows for some of the blueprint sales tax money to be spent on economic development projects. And as we talked about at that point, it was going to be a lot of controversy over that because of who was going to get the money. I mean, before, when you said, look, we're going to spend money on a bridge that we need to have, or on a widening Capitol Circle, or on a park that everybody can use, that seemed to work for the blueprint money for a long time. And now comes the economic development part of this, which is approximately $35 million. And believe it or not, we're talking about money that will be raised from 2020 to 2040. And if the vote goes like I think it'll go next week, all the economic development money, this percentage that could be used for soft, what they call soft projects, about $35 million, I believe, will already be allocated to projects. So we're barely into, we're a year and a half into the 20-year blueprint sales tax approval, and already have spent all of the economic development money. What we'll go through is $20 million of that being allocated to improvements at Doak Campbell Stadium. And that is going to have, at the meeting on Monday, I imagine a lot of speakers out talking about that. We're going to run through for you the process of, first of all, how this money, why this money can be spent on that, what is the rationale for that, and what are the implications for other projects. And, you know, like I said, we'll be spending about $35 million on economic development. If you take the 20 out of the 35, that leaves about $15 million. So where did that get spent? Well, we'll get you, it won't take us long to run through that, but we'll get you updated on that also. Now, the idea of being able to spend money on economic development is obviously to help drive jobs and to help help out the local economy. And so we'll go through the rationale on some of those expenditures. In the next segments, we're going to talk about the City Commission meeting. That'll be it's on Wednesday. A couple of interesting things there. One of the things that, you know, I don't know how to describe it. It's out of the realm of the City Commission. It's more of a resolution that's going to get a lot of play in the media. It's going to make a lot of people upset. A lot of people will be happy that they're doing this. But this is the continued nationalization of our local lives. You know, we've seen this in the media, and we've talked about it, how, you know, everything is becoming national. If you go to a local media outlet, one of the TV stations, and even our newspaper, and you will see national stories. You'll see stories that are pulled up that really don't have any relevance here. And we've talked about how this has happened when you see an outrageous story and you think that it's actually happening here in Leon County or Tallahassee, and you click on it and you find out it's in Idaho or Oregon. But they they did what they are being told to do. They got you to click on that story. And so what's starting to happen now is, you know, we're starting to adopt positions here locally on national issues, which will further divide us, because that's what, you know, the national issues do. And this resolution on what they call reproductive health care, which is a some kind of statement that the local government, I don't know who generated this, feels like they should make because of some law in Texas that has to do with abortion. So they'll go through this resolution and they'll pass it because that's how the city commission is really, that's where their ideological bent is now. And they're going to divide the community further when really they could just ignore this and maybe deal with paving roads or deal with the crime issue. If you look at the front page of some of these, again, these local news outlets, they do like crime because that sells when blood spills, obviously. But we've got shootings in apartment complexes. We've got a person finally sentenced for a home invasion murder in Oxbottom, off Oxbottom Road. But we've got a city commission dealing with an issue that they have no legal authority over. But this is a trend. And if you go back, it didn't start with this city commission or this mayor. Mayor Andrew Gillum, if you remember, took up the cause of the Syrian refugees, took up other national issues to sort of higher his profile to run for governor. But I'm not sure why Mayor Daley is taking on some of these national issues. He recently published an article on House Bill 1, the anti-riot bill. And his language he used in that article is something that I think is cause for concern. He's commented on the John Lewis Voters Act in Congress, which again is a very controversial bill. And so anyway, that's going to be something. We'll detail what this resolution is about. There's a new appointment, and I think an interesting appointment to the Citizens Police Review Board. It's an appointment that is, I think each commissioner gets an appointment. Jeremy Matlow's original appointment, I guess, had all he could stand and resigned. So Commissioner Matlow has made a new appointment. We'll go over that. Some more expenditures in these neighborhoods. We talked about a Frenchtown neighborhood plan, which I think was around $4 or $5 million. Now we have one in Griffin Heights, which is again pretty close to Frenchtown. We'll talk to you about the money that's going to be spent there and what it's going on or going towards. And then there's an item on the city commission to do with the fire service fee. Now, look, this is something that hits you in the pocketbook. It's a fee for fire service. They moved it out of the property tax a long time ago. We'll get you up to date on what that vote is about. And then at the end of the show, the last segment, we'll cover a couple of statewide issues. We'll talk about, we got a new jobs report. We'll give you what the statewide, I guess, the implication of those numbers from a national perspective, and also some of the areas in Florida, how they're doing with the job numbers. You know, there's a big brouhaha going on about the distribution of this treatment for COVID that has proved to be very successful. And Governor Ron DeSantis was behind it, getting it out in a lot of different areas. And now the distribution is being taken over by the federal government, which is limiting some of the distribution of the drug here in Florida. And there are some people speaking out about that, including some Democrats, one Nikki Fried. So we'll get you up to date on that also. So like I said, a busy show. So just sit back and we'll get you up to date on all things local here on Above the Fold. We'll be right back after this break.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to Above the Fold here on Real Talk 93.3. I'm your host, Steve Stewart. Thanks for tuning in on our Tuesday edition. If you're a homeowner, you should always be looking for ways to increase the value of your home, but it doesn't always have to be a major project. A fresh coat of paint can transform the interior and exterior of your home in a dramatic way. And I recommend starting with a visit to Epps Decorating Center, Tallahassee's premier Benjamin Moore paint retailer. Whether you need interior or exterior paint, high-end or commercial-grade coatings, Epps Decorating Center is ready to serve you. Give them a call at 385-6649, 385-6649. And we appreciate Epps Decorating Center's sponsorship here above the fold. All right, now we're going to get to the city commission meeting. As I talked about the resolution, which they've numbered 21R30, is a resolution of the City Commission of the City of Tallahassee, Florida, supporting legislative efforts to protect and strengthen Florida citizens' right to reproductive health, including abortion. Now, on Wednesday, September 8th, earlier in the month, the Tallahassee City Commission voted 5-0 to bring back a resolution that would allow the Tallahassee City Commission to take a formal stance on attempts to erode or outlaw Roe versus Wade via a Texas-style anti-abortion law. And so basically this resolution is stemming from something that happened in Texas. I saw in the news where there's another issue, I think, in Mississippi. This obviously will make it up to the Supreme Court and be decided there. But for whatever reason, the city of Tallahassee wants to weigh in on this. The Texas law bans abortion as soon as a heartbeat is detectable. That is a different standard than Roe versus Wade, which is viability. This is the heartbeat standard, which usually occurs around 6 weeks. Roe versus Wade established fetus viability at around 6 months. Now, that was back in the 70s, and you are starting to see some arguments that technology has changed since then, and that the argument over viability might be ripe before the Supreme Court. So although there's a big difference between the existence of a heartbeat and viability, 6 weeks and 6 months right now. So again, that's an issue that will be determined by the Supreme Court. But this resolution, and I'm not going to read a lot of this, it says, whereas an abortion is a constitutional right, whereas access to comprehensive reproductive health care is a fundamental human right, whereas every person, regardless of race, gender identity, income level, age, and immigration status, should have access to full range of reproductive health care starting before they ever become pregnant, including contraceptive abortion and prenatal and postpartum care. I think that, again, we talked about this in the opening segment. This is another national issue that is being brought down to the city commission to further divide our community. They can do what they want. We live in a progressive community. We are governed by Democrats. I always thought when I got involved 10 years ago, there was a little difference between what happened locally in the sense that, look, sure, we have our national ideological leanings, but here locally we're focused on making this community the best that it can be. And a lot of times that means dealing with local issues that that we can disagree on, we can talk about. But when you start putting into the debate these national issues that are very divisive, I know that Mayor Daley has done this a couple of times with the voting rights bill. He's taken a stab at Governor DeSantis with the anti-riot bill and bringing up white supremacy in his piece that he's written for state distribution. So I don't know. I guess it's a trend that we're on. It's not one that I'm real happy about. I'd rather really talk about what's going on here locally, dealing with this federal corruption trial, which again impacts us is locally here, trying to build up the business community, trying to help those that are less fortunate create jobs. And I know that we are trying to do that, but all this does by taking on these nationally divisive issues, it just make it difficult to deal with it, with the other things, because people check out. And so that will be an issue. It'll be interesting to hear the discussion around the table, around the dais about this issue. But again, it was a vote of 5-0 to bring this resolution forward. I don't expect any changes on this at the city commission meeting. Now, something else that's taken place at the city commission meeting is if you remember, there was a creation of a city police review board. And I believe each commissioner got one pick, and I think the board got another 5 picks, but hadn't heard a lot about the Citizens Police Review Board. However, on the agenda for the city commission meeting on Wednesday, Jeremy Matlow's appointment has resigned, Luther Lee, and now he has put forward another name, and that name is Adner Marcellin. M-R-C-E-L-I-N, and he lives here in Tallahassee, and he works for Bidencrump Law. His bio, it says he serves as a communications director for the Tallahassee law firm, Bidencrump Law. There, he heads the firm's communication department while aiding in the firm's attorneys in legal research and case management. A seasoned public servant, Marcellin has maintained a personal commitment to the preservation of civil rights for all. He possesses extensive leadership experience in community mobilization and civic activism. He served as the deputy communications director for the National Bar Association, as well as the executive lieutenant governor for the Sixth Circuit of the American Bar Association. Now, the issue here, obviously, is this gentleman looks very qualified. His connections with Bidencrump Law raises a red flag for me, given the way Bidencrump has conducted itself throughout, the United States in terms of dealing with some of these issues. He still calls police officers murderers who have been cleared of any wrongdoing, people that have been cleared by the federal government. And so I think that would be a red flag. But obviously, again, this is something that I think is the right of the city commissioner to make this appointment. And so he'll be voted on today, and that's something that is on the agenda. Now, the Griffin Heights issue, I think I've covered before, but I wanted to give you a little detail on this because this is money that I think, you know, when you start talking about local governments, as we just did, and wanting to work to make our community better, you know, the answer isn't always money. I understand that, and I wish we spent some more time on some of the root causes of this, and maybe we'll get there. But, we talked about some of the Frenchtown money being spent over the last couple of months. I think it was up in the $6 million area. Griffin Heights, the agenda item is the Griffin Heights Neighborhood First Plan. And they're going to allocate a little over $2 million. And this is from the city's proposed capital budget, but they can get additional funding. So it could reach, you know, up close to $6 million, but they've got it divided up into three areas: community beautification, which basically is implementation of a campaign to reduce illegal dumping and litter in the neighborhood. They've got an economic development area where, I'll give you an example of one of the things the plan proposes, is developing the now vacant store at 1309 Alabama Street for community food, retail, or other economic development benefits, developing a targeted micro-enterprise program and increasing access to small business capital for the neighborhood, establishing an opportunity zone fund, and EB-5 center. So, you know, again, this is heavy government intervention into a neighborhood, I guess, that has really fallen on hard times. Another part of this is the neighborhood infrastructure and land use, creating a working group to partner with the city to determine feasible improvements to various parks in the community, addressing gaps in the neighborhood's the bicycle pedestrian network. And so, again, this is money that look, if you're going to spend local money, I'd rather you spend it on neighborhoods. This is a neighborhood that is obviously in dire need for some revitalization. This is where $2.5 million of your tax right now of your tax dollars is going. And that'll be addressed at the city commission. And the last thing I wanted to talk about really quickly here is the fire service fee. You know, they have vote. This is something that doesn't get a lot of publicity because it's difficult to explain. Fire services were moved out of the being paid for by property taxes in about the year 2000. And so now it's a separate fee on your electric bill. There's a 15% increase in that fee that's going to go into effect in 2022. And they're also going to do a new rate study, which no doubt will result in another increase. The county is contributing about $3 million over the next 2 years as their sort of fair share of the fire service, because this is a county-wide service that is provided by the city, but it's provided by all residents in Leon County. That'll be up for a vote today at the city commission meeting. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about Blueprint and $20 million going to Doak Campbell Stadium. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
Hi, welcome back to Above the Fold. Probably not the best time to be talking about $20 million being invested into the football stadium. But here we are. The calendar was set a long time ago. So as we talked about earlier, the Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency is meeting, and that is the group, and it's all the elected officials. So if you want to take out your wrath on somebody, boy, take your pick. There's probably at least, there's everybody, if you live in the city, everybody gets to vote for a city commissioner. So that's five politicians, and then you're going to have one county commissioner. So you got six politicians if you live in the city that you can, actually more than that, you've got six because of your district commissioner, and then you got two at large. So you're represented by eight. If you live in the city, you're represented by eight of the 12 elected officials on Blueprint. So you got a lot of emails you can send out if you don't go down there and talk. But this will be next week on the 20, I believe it's on the 27th. And this is the issue that we discussed earlier. This is the economic development part of the Blueprint project, the penny sales tax over the next 20 years, which is going to collect a little over $100 million. But a new law allows some of that money to be spent on economic development or what they call soft projects. And so that is, around $35 million. So what I'm going to do is go through the first couple of items here on this agenda. And this will, give you some information on the process and also some of the implications. But it says here, now, first, this first thing is the statement of the issue. In accordance with Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency Board of Directors direction. So that means this, like, right off the bat, this is elected officials telling staff what they want to do. Board direction at their May 2021 meeting. This agenda item provides the board with an analysis and detailed report on the infrastructure repairs and maintenance at Doak Campbell Stadium, a construction economic impact analysis, a visitor economic impact analysis, a fiscal impact for up to $20 million in financing, and seeks the IA board's direction on the funding request. Now, so what they're doing here is they're providing all this analysis, and you know, this is, again, this is the staff that's doing it. Can this be biased to reach a conclusion? No doubt about it. And if you think that happens, you need to be firing some people. I mean, you know, I think City Commissioner Curtis Richardson has been very clear in that, look, we have a professional staff to provide us direction, and we're going to trust that staff when they're providing things that, you know, is in their wheelhouse of expertise. Obviously, if there's political decisions to be made, then that falls to the elected officials. But there's a lot of analysis involved here, which we're not going to dig into. There's another section called the fiscal impact. And I think this is something, again, that, you know, people need to be aware of. So should the board approve this request, the item has a fiscal impact, which has been included in the proposed 2021 budget. The FSU proposal requests $20 million in commitment. The estimated fiscal impact, including debt service, would be actually $26.5 million. It is important to note that there is only $20 million left in bonding capacity for the OEV's budget over the remaining lifetime of the 20-year sales tax collection. Now, that's what we talked about earlier. And so they've already spent about $15 million, and we'll get to where they've spent that money in a minute. But so we're barely a year and a half into the 20-year window, and all the economic development money will be accounted for if this $20 million is spent. Now, you might ask yourself, how is it possible that this will qualify as economic development upgrades to Doak Campbell Stadium? Well, here's the answer to that. The OEV, under the policy direction of the IA board, serves to improve the business climate and reduce challenges for existing businesses. While the Economic Development Strategic Plan does not expressly provide support for venue upgrades, such as a football stadium, Florida statutes does not preclude the use of OEV funds to support such activities if they are determined to be an economic development project having a general public purpose of improving the local economy as determined by the IA board. So basically what this says, look, if you got enough elected officials that'll vote for it, it basically can happen. And it says here, regarding the Doak Campbell Stadium repair funding request, it should be noted that this request for repair funding follows the IA board's approval of similar funding allocations of $10 million for repairs in Florida A&M's University Bragg Memorial Stadium, and also an approval of enhancements to TCC's athletic facilities. So basically, you know, and this is a little one, this is tough to deal with, because all the economic development money, or I would say the majority of the economic development money from the penny sales tax is going to sports facilities. So as I said, there's about $35 million. So we're going to add $20 million to Doak Campbell Stadium, $10 million to FAMU. Now, I believe, yes, so that's $30 million. Another $1 million to TCC, that's $31 million. The other $2.5 million is going to a place called North Florida Incubator Labs. And so you'll have to look into exactly what that is. But that's the only, appears to be the only non-stadium upgrade dollar that will be spent on this issue. Now, you know, one of the problems we're going to, this is going to be an interesting debate, because as you know, Commissioner Matlow has called the blueprint process a sham, which I believe is a little bit of a reach. However, it's projects like these that I think is going to be interesting, because it does give an opportunity for someone to question this. Now, you know, who voted for the $10 million to Bragg and the $1 million to TCC? I believe it was unanimous for everyone. So I think now this $20 million, I know that we've had at least two, maybe three elected officials who are not interested in moving forward this, and that would be Commissioner Bill Proctor, I believe, and then also Jeremy Matlow and City Commissioner Jack Porter. And, you know, this brings in so many different aspects of some of Commissioner Matlow's concerns. If you've been following the news lately, he has really been after Ben Pingree, who is the head of OEV. I think that is probably a wrong strategy politically to go after individuals. Mr. Pingree, who was in some of the text messages for lobbying an elected official to get his job. Oh my goodness. Imagine that, lobbying an elected official to get your job. Now, I'm not saying it's right, but that's what happens in local government. When you have these jobs that are up for grabs that are paying six figures, you have people lobbying elected officials. You know, I think that Mr. Matlow's concern on the blueprint process should be directed to the people that run it, which is the county administrator, Vince Long, and the city manager, Reese Goad. Now, it was the county administrator, Vince Long, and the city manager at the time, Rick Fernandez, who hired Ben Pingree. Now, so if the analysis here that they provide supports this $20 million investment in Doak Campbell Stadium, if you got questions about the analysis, I'm sure they'll be asked at the meeting, and there's obviously, this is a very technical analysis, but it will be interesting to see if Mr. Matlow takes the emotional side of this again, drops, you know, a lot of loaded language and goes after these people personally. I think that, again, this is a process since 2000 that has been held, you know, has been upheld by a lot of people in the community as doing the right thing in terms of investing in infrastructure that is needed. Now, you know, if you look at the constituencies that are covered by these expenditures, TCC, FAMU, and Doak Campbell, you know, it covers a lot of people. Covers a lot of different interests. Now, the analysis of the economic impact of Florida State football, if you look at over the last 20 years, I think is really, you can't underestimate that. As I said before, this comes at a bad time in the process of sort of rehabilitating the football program, but it also could be viewed as part of the process to help rehabilitate it. So it will be interesting to hear the comments of elected officials, and we'll have an update on this next week. So look for that. All right, when we get back, we'll tie up some loose ends and cover a couple of statewide issues. So stay tuned. I'm Steve Stewart. You're listening to Above the Fold.
If it's local and it matters, it's Above the Fold with Steve Stewart on Real Talk 93.3.
All right, welcome back to our last segment on our Tuesday edition Above the Fold here. We're going to tie up some loose ends and look at some state stories. Unemployment numbers are in for August, and Florida's unemployment rate fell to 5.0% in August, down 1% from the July reported rate of 5.1%. Says here that the DEO announced Florida has experienced 16 consecutive months of job growth, gaining 19,400 private sector jobs over the month. In total, Florida has gained just under a million jobs since April of 2020. Now, in terms of compared to the national rate for the last, says for 13 consecutive months, the state of Florida's unemployment rate has remained below the national rate, which is currently at 5.2%. The lowest unemployment rate in Florida was reported in the Crestview, Fort Walton Beach, Destin metropolitan area at 3.8%. And the highest unemployment rate is in the Sebring area, which is down in South Central Florida, is at 6.5%. The unemployment rate in some of the bigger cities, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach, is 5.6. Tampa, St. Petersburg, Clearwater, 4.5. And along the I-10 corridor, Pensacola is at 4.5. Jacksonville is at 4.3. And I think ours is just, I think ours is right at 4.5. This is the metro area. We'll have the Leon County numbers up actually next week for you. But they're looking at the metro area, which includes Leon County, Jefferson County, Gadsden, and Wakulla. But so anyway, unemployment down and performing better than the national level. A statewide story that has implications here in the capital city with regards to the vaccine mandate. As you know, Leon County government is requiring that all employees be vaccinated by October 1st, which is not far away, or they will lose their job. A couple of local governments have done that around the state. City of Gainesville is one, and there's a lawsuit that has been filed there. And Florida Attorney General Ashley Moody has offered support by filing an amicus brief in the Eighth Circuit Court, saying the vaccine mandates do not hold constitutional muster, as well as acting as a deterrent for recruiting new members to Florida's law enforcement agencies. And this is from the statutes. Florida's vaccine passport ban forbids a government entity from, among other things, requiring persons to provide any documentation certifying COVID-19 vaccination to gain access to the governmental entity's operations in the state. The city's policy operates to deny employees access to the city's operations in violations of that statute. The term operations is broad enough to include the hiring and firing of city employees who are integral in running a government, and the term persons is sufficient to include city employees. Now, they're going at this in terms of Moody cited Governor Ron DeSantis and the Florida legislators' recent efforts to attract law enforcement officers from across the country and in wake of the Abolish the Police movement. The resulting police shortages are a threat to public safety when law enforcement agencies lose officers without bringing in a number of qualified people. And their argument is basically that this mask mandate will, or not mask mandate, the vaccine mandate will have an impact. Now, you know, DeSantis has recently warned against the mandate by criticizing some of the municipalities enforcing it. And also was basically said they're going to be fined by, I think it's like $5,000 per employee. Now, the interesting part about this here locally is that we've got, you know, this has been implemented by County Administrator Vince Long, and his argument is that, you know, we need to do this so we can keep delivering services. And, you know, the issue on that, and, you know, he hasn't been questioned on this, is that there are other local governments here in Leon County that are not doing the mandate and are able to keep up their services. And we're talking about the city of Tallahassee. You're talking about the other constitutional officers, you know, the sheriff's department, the clerk's office, the property appraiser's office. You also are talking about Leon County school boards have not dealt with the mandate for teachers or employees, the vaccine mandate, and they're keeping up their services also. So that argument is interesting, and I don't see it brought up in the article addressing Moody's support for the plaintiff's legal action against the city of Gainesville. But you would think it would be something that would be discussed. I mean, what is your rationale for requiring the mandate? And then you would think you would have to show a level of, you know, an issue. Where have you been able, where have you failed to be able to provide services due to the COVID pandemic? And that would be, you know, I mean, indications of that would be people, you know, having a lot of people out sick, losing a lot of employees due to COVID. I mean, I think you would have to at least demonstrate that if that was brought up in a court of law. And it'll be interesting to see if those questions get asked. Another issue, this is one on the COVID treatment that, you know, if you go back and look, we've had this spike, and it's been it's just been devastating in terms of the hospitalizations and the deaths, the Delta variant wave that we've been hit with. And at the time, I guess a couple of weeks ago, maybe over a month ago now, Governor DeSantis was going around to all these different areas and opening up these clinics or putting in, announcing the availability to this treatment of people who do not get vaccinated. It's called a monoclonal treatment therapies. It's basically, this is a drug created by the company called Regeneron. And it is, I mean, look, this is not a Republican or Democrat thing. This is an effective treatment for COVID. People who test positive and they get the treatment within, you know, 5 to 10 days. And it is something that works. And there have been Democrats that have supported this. The Florida Hospital Association has talked about its impact on hospitalizations. And they have been set up. There's one here in Tallahassee that has been set up for people to get this treatment, this therapy. And now, all of a sudden, the Biden administration, led by the Department of Health and Human Services, announced last week they will be taking over the distribution of the treatments and, quote, rationing the amount of treatments to states like Florida. So now we're going to get, Florida's number of treatments are going to be cut. So obviously DeSantis is upset about this. He's calling it politics. And he has support of, from unlikely quarters. Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried sent a letter to the White House asking the Biden administration to maintain the current levels of treatment allotments for Florida while simultaneously slamming Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. She says, while federal health officials have set Florida's allocation of treatment doses at 30,950, I'm concerned that more residents may need to avail themselves of this therapy than doses will be available, given our state's long delay in implementing this therapy. So they're basically saying that we waited a long time to implement this. Well, I think that we were one of the first states to do this, but we'll have to go back and check that out. Fried continues, while we certainly understand the frustration at the inequitable distribution of this treatment to just a handful of states, I would respectfully ask that time be extended before altering our current dose allotments, giving our state time to further reduce COVID-19 cases from their recent peaks. Now, you know, this really, and from what I'm hearing now, is Governor DeSantis is trying to go around the federal government to secure some of the doses of this therapy through private means because it has been so effective. The question would be now is, you know, why is all of a sudden the Biden administration interested in doing this? It's clear that the impact on the hospitalizations, which have fallen tremendously over the last 3 or 4 weeks, are partly due to this. And hopefully this won't get into the way of that with the wave, the Delta variant, which obviously is now in its hopefully waning weeks. Unfortunately, we'll still continue to see the deaths that lag the cases and the hospitalizations. Here locally, you can see the hospitalizations declining. But again, there are still the issue of dealing with the cases and people that did not get this treatment. And I guess from what I understand is the treatment is not effective after you've had of COVID for a week or so, or maybe a little over 10 days. So I would assume people actually get COVID. They're not vaccinated and they wait until it really gets bad to go to the hospital. And then this treatment doesn't really work. So I think DeSantis pushing this obviously has helped. We'll see where this goes and if Nikki Fried's letter has any impact on the Biden administration, and also if Governor DeSantis' efforts trying to secure more doses of the treatment, which again is very effective. It provides to be results in getting more of those treatments here in Florida. But anyway, all right, that's all the time we have for today. I appreciate you tuning in, and we'll be back on Thursday to give you an update of what's going on here locally. But until then, stay tuned for the Jeff Cameron Show. Have a great afternoon, and like I said, we'll be back Thursday.
Sunshiny day. It's gonna be bright.